Here we go. This topic of the crash course is life cycle events. The first part that I want to talk about is the first mitzvah that is done either by or to a Jewish boy is Bris Milah. Now, it is the first mitzvah given to Avraham Avinu at what age? 99. And who's the first person to have a bris at 8 days? Yitzchak. Okay. There is also a relationship between, this is Parshat Lech Lecha, we come into Eretz Yisrael, Chazal see a connection between Bris Milah and the rights to Eretz Yisrael. Now, Bris is a physical distinction, and it is required for a ger, a male. If the person's already circumcised, then what? Okay, so it's called, anyone know the phrase? Hatafas dam bris, drawing some blood. I've been told that there are rabbanim that say that if a person finds that too painful for whatever reason, it might be permissible to convert someone without doing hatafas dam bris. I had a student who converted who said that they didn't do hatafas dam bris for him. But usually that's the general rule. You do hatafas dam bris, yeah? Do you do Hatavas Dam Bris? Yeah. They put them under? What do you mean? Also, first of all, obviously if an adult is having a bris, so it's going to be very painful, so they'll do local anesthesia. I had a student who made this big mistake. He had to have a bris mila, and he decided, I'm not going to do local anesthesia. And he said it hurt like crazy, which makes a lot of sense to me. Now, if the Shulchan Aruch says this is like the most important mitzvah asay, that's what Shulchan Aruch calls Bris Milah, the most important mitzvah asay. There's a midrash that quotes Turnus Rufus having a discussion with Rabbi Kiva, and he said if God really wanted every male to be circumcised, he would have created us that way. To which he gets into this whole thing saying, well, does God really want, like, donuts and bread? Why didn't he just create donuts and bread? Why did he create flour that we have, wheat that we have turned to flour? So his point was, God wants us to be involved in the process, and therefore man is made in this way that we are involved. He says same thing about if God wanted the poor people to have money, why don't you just give it to them? So say God wanted those who have money to help support those who don't have money. He wants us to be involved. Now, the mitzvah is upon whom?
On the father, then the beis din.
Okay, on the father, right? What does the Gemara say? Gemara says that a father's chayav in certain mitzvahs. First, he says, is bris milah, right? Gemara and Kedushim. So, father's chayav in what? Who remembers that Gemara? Mila?
Swimming.
Job is our swimming.
Before, let's go in order.
Bris.
Teach
him.
Before that? Before that? Pidyon haben. Okay. Bris, Pidyon HaBen, then Torah, then it says getting married and a job and possibly swimming, right?
What?
Right, but that's also in the Gemara, not in the Mishnah, but it's also possibly there. Okay, my father told me once, he heard in the name of some rabbi, I don't remember right now who he heard it from, that since the transportation that was dangerous at that time would be by sea, so once you know how to swim, today you might be teaching a kid, getting driver's ed, how you know how to drive a car. Now, if the general rule is mitzvah bo yoter mibishlucha, which usually means what? What does it mean? Better for you to do it than to appoint a shaliach. Why is it that, like, no one does the bris milah on their kids?
Well, ask your wife.
Yes, and even though shlucho shalom kamoso, we say mitzvah bo yoter mibishlucho. So tell me, figure it out.
You don't have to actually do it, you just have to arrange that it's done.
No, but I'm saying, like,
people don't know how to do it.
Okay, so there is an idea. What you're saying is the mitzvah is for me to arrange a bris milah. I did see one Rishon say that, and that's why it's not a mitzvah stashas man grama.
Because after 8 days, you always have
the
mitzvah
to do it.
Okay, but
don't know how to do it.
Okay, good. This is what Ariel is saying. What's the reason why mitzvah bo yoter mishlucho? Because it shows that you care, right? If you were to say to your wife, listen, I would have showed up to our wedding, but why do you have to schedule on Sunday afternoon? The football game Sunday afternoon. So I'm going to send somebody else instead. He'll give you the ring. We'll Photoshop me into all the pictures. And now that does work. I don't know how long you'll stay married, but that does work. But it shows that you don't care enough that you send somebody else to do the job. Here, it's because I care about my little 8-day-old kid, I'm sending someone else to do the job. I'm not going to sit there and practice, you know, and say, hey, I've always wanted to do this. So that is why the majority of normal people don't do the bris on their kids. I did, since I'm not normal.
What?
I did on one of my kids. The moel for my second son said to me, you know, we're getting ready for it. He goes, do you want to do the bris? And I said to myself, well, mitzvah bo, yoter mishlucha. So he said, I could set the whole thing up for you. You just cut. I said, all right, I'm down. So I went, I washed up. And my wife's in the back of the room with my mom. And someone says to her, all right, now the moel's going to make the bracha. And then I start saying, baruch, ata. And like, and they're, my mother and my wife are looking at each other and going like, what is he doing? So I didn't get to do my third son because of that. Yeah. But
I want to do my kid's bris.
But
the moel put everything in place.
The moel, yeah. I don't know if you guys have ever seen a bris up close.
I
but
have.
There's
scary.
Sort of like a shield. It's sort of like a shield. You lift the foreskin, let's say, like between, let's say, the shield.
It's
like, you know, it looks like between two fingers. And you lift the foreskin. And now you just take the knife and you cut down. It's not really that hard.
I mean, remember, we're all like really close to the bris once.
Yes, but you probably weren't watching. Busy crying and they were sticking like wine in a cloth into your mouth. So the truth is the baby doesn't cry at the bris. He's crying the minute they take the diaper off. And then he starts crying like, why is everyone taking that diaper off? So, but you can do it. But like I said, most people don't. Most people don't. They get somebody else do it. What?
I've seen it done as Skippy.
I watched him watch it.
Did you see him? He fainted.
I watched
right.
the reaction.
I know. My father
I
was...
I called my parents. I'm like, emo, what was a bris? It's like, what? Like, I'm never having kids. Never having
okay,
kids.
Okay, you just don't have to show up to the bris. You just... You'll, to someone else, be the... You know, be the shliach, or bring the baby over. My father was a sandek. He sat there the whole time looking up. You know, like he's like holding the baby, just looking up. I said, okay, fine. I'm not a little squeamish, so it didn't bother me. But I think it is a cool thing. If you are a moel, then certainly you should do the bris mila on your own kids, unless, of course, your wife thinks that that's nuts. But
did you ask Billy?
If they did for him, probably his father probably did for him. I have to ask him. Yeah.
Did they pay the moel to do it?
In Israel, the minhag is that the moel doesn't take any money, but it's expected that you then voluntarily give him a certain amount of money or a gift or something like that, because that's his job. So, like, he's going from bris to bris. So, that is his job. In America, they might have a fee even, but in Israel, I haven't come across a moel yet that said, this is my fee, you know, and you just, like, when my first kid that was, you know, born here, so I just asked around, what's the going rate? And, you know, then we gave that gift.
He always gets a tip.
Yes. Yes. That's a bad mole joke. Yes. Now.
Do you keep the tip? What do you do with it?
Did you understand what he said? Okay, fine. We're not going there. Okay. The part that is cut off, if that's what you're referring to, gets buried. Gets buried. Gets buried. It's part of the body. Gets buried. Okay.
What is he going to do?
It gets buried. Okay.
You keep it in the ground.
Where do they bury? It's just like put it in the ground.
I don't know. There's a little graveyard for foreskins. I have no idea. I see that little section in the cemetery. I have no idea. I have no idea. Someone's going to listen to this recording and go, what are they doing there? Okay, fine. Maybe it's a mole will send us a message. But this is where they do it. In the garden, yes. Now, the mitzvah is on the 8th day, not before. And therefore, if the child is born ben hashmashos, which is like a suffix, what day it is. So what do? We push it off, right? You can always do it on the 9th day. You can never do it on the 7th day. So if we have a suffix, what day this is, so we say, all right, just wait until the next day. So you have a very interesting thing. Shabbos, you can only do the bris mila if it actually the baby's born on Shabbos. So then exactly 8 days later is Shabbos. So, right? You count. Shabbos. You count. Shabbos 1, then Sunday's two, right?
So if the I'm next born so at eighth day on Shabbos, that counts as day one.
Absolutely.
That's crazy.
Okay. So if you were born Mincha on Shabbos, your bris will be on Shabbos. Assuming that you're healthy, your bris will be on Shabbos. Now, Shabbos, you don't have a special halacha. Since I could only do a definite bris on Shabbos, if a baby's born Ben Hashemoshos on Friday, when is a bris? Good, Sunday. I can't do it on the next Friday because maybe that's day seven. I can't do it on Shabbos because, well, maybe that's day nine. And I can't do a bris that's not on time. So you push it off to Sunday. So you can have a weird thing. You can have twins that are born on Friday evening, and the older one will have the bris after the younger one. If the older one is born Ben Hashmashos of Friday, his bris will be on Sunday. And if the second twin was born after Tzeita Kochavim, his bris will be on Shabbos. So son number two, they're both healthy, will have the bris on Saturday. And son number one will have the bris born on Friday. And if you have triplets like Baruch over there, if one was born before Ben Hashemashos, one during Ben Hashemashos, and one on Tzeisa Kochavim, three healthy sons will have britot on Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Yeah. You could have that, right? That's definitely a possibility, yeah.
Why don't we have bris milah during the night?
Why don't we do it at night?
Yeah.
Pasuk says Yom Himalato has to be during the day. That's why we do it during the day. Now, what about morning versus afternoon? How many of you guys had your bris in the afternoon?
I have no idea.
Okay. Most people have a bris in the morning, right? After Shacharis. What would be the reason? Good. Zrizin Makdim and Lemitzos. Good. Zrizin Makdim and Lemitzos. But, good, but then you have this other idea. What happens if I were to wait till the afternoon? It would be, more people would be able to come. Let's say you have relatives that live up north, okay? Or you have relatives that live in Haifa, or they live in Tzfat. And if you have the bris milah here in Yerushalayim in the morning, they won't make it. If you have in the afternoon, they'll come in. So, is it better to have more people there, and that would be like what we call hiddur mitzvah, or is it better to do zrizim makdim and lemitzvah? Most poskim say we do zrizim, but even zrizim, most people don't have the brisas after the vatikin minyan. You know, like even that, we're a little like parav on that, you know, because no one's showing up at like that 5:30 minyan. So we do it in the chakras in the morning, and like you said, people get to work. Unless, of course, you're in Kollel, then you just eat the breakfast first, and then you go to work. But that's the majority. But both the Lubavitcher Rebbe and others say you're absolutely allowed to. If it's going to be more simple, do it in the afternoon. And if, let's say, I don't know, here, you guys are living in Israel, and you have family flying in for the bris, and they won't be able to get there in the morning. They got a flight, but they'll get there by the afternoon. So you can absolutely wait until the afternoon and do your bris in the afternoon. You can't do it at night, but you can do it in the afternoon. So I have seen, I've been to Britot. We had one of our sons had a bris in the afternoon for that reason, because my wife's grandparents were coming in, and, you know, they were coming at Dafka, and we made my wife's grandfather the sanduk. So obviously you're going to wait. It's going to be sanduk. So we waited. Obviously you can't wait, like I said, till the night. But most, like I said, most pritot in the morning for this reason. But for hiddur mitzvah, if you want to move it, there are poskim whom to rely upon. Yes?
Tisha B'Av.
So Tisha B'Av, you have people that do a Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur, and they do it late in the day, so that then you can have a Suda afterwards.
It's almost like the right. Wine, right?
What?
Yeah, so you have it right before.
Right, so you have it late in the day, before it's. And then you'll have a Suda after Tisha B'Av. Or same with Yom Kippur. There are people that, you know, will do it that way, and then have a Suda post Yom Kippur. Other people will just be cheap and say, all right, I get out of making a Suda for everybody. Oh, it's on a fast day, good for you. Came to my breast, I don't have to feed you any food. There are people like that. We've probably met people like that. Okay? But yes, there are a lot of people that will have it late in the afternoon, so they have the Suda then. Yes?
Let's say first of Sunday morning.
Right.
But my family can't fly in, so they come in Sunday afternoon. They get delayed even that. Can I wait till Monday morning?
Absolutely not. baby's healthy, you have to do the bris bismano.
Question.
Yeah.
What if the baby's not healthy, so you're already pushing off the date?
So then you have different opinions. So first, if you're pushing off the date, obviously you don't do it on Shabbos.
Right.
Okay? I don't know. You know, you're supposed to do it as early as possible. I don't know. I assume that there will be people that say to you, okay, it's already not doing it bisman. You need to wait another day till your family arrives. I assume. I'm not... I think I've seen people say that, but I don't know. I know that last time we met, I said something wrong, so I'll say it now. I said last time that when you take your tefillin off to go to the bathroom, you always make a bracha. When you come back, and you asked me about it, and then I checked, and I said, oh, that's only what's called a gedolim. If you urinate, you don't make a new bracha when you put it on. And the reason is because you're actually allowed to urinate with your tefillin on, Gemara and Bracha says. You're like, people were tefillin all day. They would sort of like just put their hand and cover it up. So you could. Most people don't, I hope. But since you can, you would not have to make a new bracha if you took off your tefillin to go to the bathroom and just had to urinate. So I already made a mistake once last week, so I'm not going to do it again. Now, I think I've seen people, you know, say you could wait that extra day for relatives if you're already not bisman, but I don't remember. Usually we try to do it as soon as possible. Once the doctor gives you the clean bill of health, so then, you know, however long it takes you to organize getting a mo'el and setting up everything.
Is it a bracha vatal if you do make a bracha here?
I don't know. There was an opinion that I saw that says that you make it no matter what. There was another opinion I saw that says you never make the bracha. And the general halach, general accepted opinion was differentiating between what's called ketanim and gedolim. That's the general, but there were poskim on both sides. Okay. Now, pidyon ben. So it's very cool. One year after the other in this yeshiva, I had one year a guy needed a bris milah, and the next year a guy needed a pidyon ben. All right, so it was very cool. Both of them were cases of Gerim. Not Gerim, sorry, my bad. Both of them were cases where the father wasn't Jewish. So, like I said to... what?
Can you have anything to the dad?
No, it goes to both.
The Pidyon HaBen is the firstborn to this woman. And that's why Yaakov Avinu, for example, could have had four Pidyon HaBens if each of his wives, and they did, had a firstborn son. So the Pidyon HaBen with Reuben, the Pidyon HaBen with Yosef, and with, you know, Dan and God, and right? So you have Pidyon HaBen with your firstborn from whatever wife you have. So in both cases, you know, there was no Jewish father, and I asked the students who, like, we were learning actually Kedushin, so I got this one guy, and I said, who did your bris? Yeah, about that. We got to talk. Okay. So then we arranged, like, the whole bris. The next year, this is already on my mind, I had another guy who had a similar situation. His father wasn't Jewish. And it turns out he had a bris, but he was also the oldest. I said, what opinion of Ben? So he got in touch with his mom. Never happened, so we had it here in the yeshiva. So, what?
Were they married to the father?
Who redeems him?
Or they just...
Rav Korn did it. And it was really sort of funny because the guy was black. And Rav Korn said, do you want me to own you? Goes, oh, ain't nobody going to own me. That's what he said. Anyway, so that was a whole done in front of, in the base matter. So it was a little funny. But we didn't carry him on a little silver pallet because he's about 6'2". So, you know, we just let him walk there and stand there and exchange the money, which we'll talk about in a second. Now, Pidyon HaBen is who married? Were the parents married? They were married. They were married. Both cases married. Both cases, obviously, the woman was not religious who married a non-Jew. And then, as time went on, the kid found something, NCSY, this, that, got more affiliated, and ended up coming to yeshiva. Okay?
What does he go? Is he go by Abram, I guess?
Yeah, his father, yeah, doesn't have a Hebrew name. Right. Now, Pidyon HaBen is somewhat rare. Why? Because, first of all, it has to be the firstborn child, has to be a son. Okay? So if a family had a daughter, so they're already out. So that knocks out 50% of families. Then what else? Give me one.
Then it also has to be okay. Miscarriage.
Okay,
no
good.
C-section.
Good. So A has to be natural birth, meaning no C-section. Has to be called Peter Rechen. Okay? Now, just as
both sets have to be
you should know, though, if, let's say, the firstborn was a girl, but she was a C-section, We don't say, oh, now your next kid who came out from the womb gets pinyan of them. Like you might have thought to say, well, petarechem, this is the first one that came out from the rechem. We don't hold that. It's a Mishnah that says it. So it has to be firstborn, has to be a male from a natural birth, no C-section. Cannot have had a miscarriage before. And
both sides
one more. Good. Both sides have to be Yisrael. It cannot be the man or the woman, a ben or a bat, Levi or Cohen. So when you throw all of those things in, so you have a much lower percentage of people of pinyan of ben. Anyone here pinyan of ben?
My brother.
Okay, I had one.
My brother had a suffix because my grandpa is a Levi. There's a question if my grandma's conversion was correct, so she, my mother could be a bas Avram or a bas Levi. So there's a question.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, so it was really cool.
Okay. I mean, it's not sure.
My mother's mother is a convert, but there's a question if her conversion was correct. So when she married my grandfather and had my mother,
question if she was Jewish?
If she became Jewish, but she was a convert. But if
she when she had the baby, she might not have been Jewish yet.
Was my mother born Jewish or not? There's a question.
Okay. Now,
converted on her own account.
Now, really, the Bechor belongs to God.
But
after Makot Bechorot, right? After Makot Bechorot, where God saved all the Bechorot, so really, every Bechor has to like pledge total obedience to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and just do holy things. And we should be working, me and all my other fellow firstborn Bechors, we should all be working in the Beit HaMikdash as Kohanim.
But you're Pidyon.
Yeah.
He announced that.
And now, what happens? The Pidyon, I'm redeemed. Right? I do it to Kohen, who takes my place.
Aww.
And now, I'm allowed to do whole things. Obviously, the more Kodesh things I do, the better. But I'm redeemed and no longer obligated to just do holy things. And the Kohen says to the father, do you want me to have the son, or do you want to redeem him? Okay, and if father, you know, again, most saint fathers will say we want the kid, and he pays the money. How much money does he pay?
Five
slatim. Five slatim. Now the sella is 20 grams of silver. Now that could be a lot of money, and today in Israel, Rav Korn has them. You have special coins. Special coins. It costs a lot of money. Just check and see how much 20 grams of silver goes for. I think when I looked last, it was like $17, which means five would be about $85. So Rav Korn has these coins. What does he do? He wants to be able to reuse them all the time. So he'll go over to the person who wants to do the pidyon ben. He says, listen, these coins cost, let's say for argument's sake, 300 shekel. And he'll buy the coins from him for 300 shekel, then he gives Rav Korn back those coins and he uses the next time he does a pidyon ben. Okay, so I think they also, in the United States, people try to use silver dollars. Silver dollars also cost a lot more than a dollar.
It costs 300 shekel to do a pidyon ben.
Something like that.
That's
right?
Crazy.
Yeah, yeah. And he's not supposed to give it back. Right? If Kohanim give it back, so people start knowing, oh, he's the guy that gives the money back, so I'll go to him. And he would be like causing other Kohanim who could use that income a loss. So
according to bank can be just
Kohen. Yeah, I'm not sure that that's how you can support your family by having the every so often pidyon of ben done with you. But yes, this is what you can do.
Pick up any straw. Like, most straws.
Most straws are not pidyon of ben.
Right.
You only have one kid that has the possibility to be a pidyon of ben.
And we said
it's natural birth.
I know what it is.
Okay. So it doesn't happen all that often. And there's a lot of Kohanim. You know, like chances are you're not the only Kohen in your community. Okay? Like we did it for my grandson, our oldest grandson had a pidyon of ben. And and he ended up doing it with who? His great like the baby's great grandfather was a Kohen. Because so like the grandmother was a Kohen. But the mother wasn't, the father wasn't. So, therefore, the kid that wasn't a bas or a ben, but the great-grandfather was still alive, Baruch Hashem, and did a pidyon ben with him. It's very cute. Brought him a little silver platter. Okay, great. Now, here's this really cool case.
You haven't seen this, bro.
I mean, not cool. I said a cool.
No. But it's, technically, actually, yeah.
What?
30 days. It has to be 30 days.
Yeah, here's the way it goes. It has to be after 30 days. You have to have 30 full days go by. Miscarriage, I said miscarriage has to be after 40 days. The woman had to have carried 40 days and then have a miscarriage. If it was a miscarriage before that, the Gemara called it Maya Ba'alma. That's not considered like a fetus, and that wouldn't be counted for a miscarriage. So you have to wait after 30 full days. So usually on day 31, you do the Pidyon HaBen. Now, here is this interesting case. There was a woman who was a Balat Tshuva and never told her now really from husband that she had a sexual past. Not only a sexual past, she got pregnant and had an abortion.
Ooh.
Okay, now, Balat Tshuva, she had an abortion. She never told her husband. Now she got married and she had a baby boy. And her husband said, this is great, we're going to have a Pidyon HaBen.
Dun, dun, dun.
Now, but she knows this is, this baby really should not have a Pidyon HaBen. So the question was,
did he not know that she was a
sister? She did not know. He didn't know. Okay? Absolutely. And now, her argument to the rabbi was, if I tell him, it'll ruin my Shalom Abayis. Ruin my Shalom Abayis. So, what should I do? So I heard this case from Ari Leibowitz. He quoted Rav Scheinberg. And it's such a cool answer. Okay? What's the halacha of sota? What do we do with sota? We have a suspected adulteress, and we take what?
The water.
We take this water, but what do we put in the water? Parchment with God's name. And what do we do with the parchment with God's name? We erase it in the water. And what's the whole idea? God says, I am willing to have my name erased for the sake of what? Shalom Bayit, because we hope to put together people together. If so, if God's willing to have his name erased, Rav Scheinberg paskind, you can say a bracha levatala. You can let your husband say a bracha levatala. He's going to do this Pidyon HaBen. You don't have to tell him. But Shalom Bayis, he'll think that he now had a Pidyon HaBen. He'll say a bracha levatala. That's okay. For Shalom Bayis, God lets his name be erased. He'll let his name be taken in vain in a bracha levatala. And you don't have to cause a problem with Shalom Bayis. After I heard this case, I went looking up and I saw Rav Avadia has the exact same case. And he paskins the exact same way. Exact same way.
They don't care about lying to your husband.
Said Hashem lies to Avram about Sarah.
Yeah, and that he actually said something. He said, "Oh, she's saying like here. She just didn't say she didn't. She kept herself something." So I found it fascinating because I would have thought, of course, got to be honest. But like Shalom Bayis, what a cool thing! Quoting from Sota, God's name getting erased. Sotu Rochel Atala. I thought that was such an ingenious psak. And you know, and probably it happens more than we know. If already Rabbi Leib was quoted from Scheinberg, and then I found it in Rabbi Vadi Yosef, I guess these questions, and probably most cases don't even ask; they just don't say anything. You know, these are the people that at least asked.
What?
So,
I'm assuming they looked in the Shas and Jews of Rabbi Vadi.
Who? Everyone?
You said they didn't ask.
All the people didn't ask, right? Because they already saw it in print. Maybe. Good. Way to done. Okay. Another. Okay, so that was Bris Mila Pidyon HaBen. We get the Bar Mitzvah. All right, Bar Mitzvah.
Ooh.
So, there's no ceremony necessary. You have these people, sometimes you meet these like adults and go, I never had a Bar Mitzvah. That's not true. You became Bar Mitzvah when you turned 13. You never had a party. Okay, fine. You had a Bar Mitzvah. With nightfall on your 13th birthday, you become a Bar Mitzvah. And now you can be counted to a minion. What's the first mitzvah that you'll accomplish? Yeah, you say Maariv, you say Kriyat Shema at night. Maybe you listen to your father or mother and did Kibbutz Avim. But like, you know,
that's the first 13. Day, are you?
13, you're probably still listening. When you get to like high school, you stop listening. But, you know, 13, you're still pretty good.
So,
I'm sure you do. So if this is true, what's the reason for having a party? Why do I have a party? So there's a beautiful Gemara. Okay, I think it's also in Kedushin. Gemara says Rabbi Yosef was blind. And he learned that people who are exempt from mitzvot don't get as much schar as people who are chayav in mitzvot. Mm-hmm. Right? We know. Mitzvah bo. I'm always say, what's the phrase again?
From Sarah
Agra. Another from Sarah Agra.
No, when people tell you what to do, you
have... Well, what's the phrase again? I don't remember right now. But whoever is obligated gets more schar. Okay? So Rabbi Yosef was blind. And he thought, as a blind man, he was exempt from mitzvot. And he was doing it voluntarily. And now, he heard that if you're obligated to mitzvot, you get more schar. Rabbi Yosef then said, if someone will give a drasha and explain that blind people are obligated to mitzvot, I will throw a party for the rabbis. And from here comes the idea. When we become obligated mitzvot at bar or bat mitzvah, we should throw a party. Because we're now obligated. And as obligated people, we get more schar. We're not just voluntarily doing it. We're doing it as part of obligation. And we're excited about it. So therefore, we throw a party. And based on this, it would seem that a bat mitzvah should also have a party. Right? There are poskim that says Ravatska Tshuva, as does Rav Moshe and others, that you can have a, it wasn't done until, let's say, 56 years ago, but if, you want to have a bat mitzvah 56 years ago, started to have bat mitzvahs, absolutely, there should be no difference between a boy and a girl. You don't have to do anything nonsense like read a parsha, neither do we. We don't have to read anything either. We just become bar mitzvah. So you absolutely can't have a party. Today, the problem is our bar mitzvah parties are way more bar than mitzvah. And, and that's a big problem. But, hopefully you have a bar mitzvah. The child not only lanes and shows everyone that he's capable of doing that. He says, drasha. Where is he laning from?
Where is this custom of laning from?
I don't know. I guess the idea was to say, hey, I'm counting the minion. I'm going to now lane and show I'm part of it. And I can learn Torah. I can teach Torah. And that's why a lot of bar mitzvah boys also say drashot. They like speech. You'll give a speech at your Dvar Torah. With all of my kids, I had my kids make a siyum. Make a siyum on something we learned together. And my daughter also. Yeah?
Could you say, and just probably answer, could be called into the Torah now, you have to know how to be a Torah until, get bracha.
Ah, so. Good. At the time, anyone who got an aliyah used to lane. So maybe that was it, and it started. They were already doing that, so now they started laning.
First only on Monday, Thursday. You probably let me say the bracha while you're delivering.
Right. So, look, you're not obligated. I'm telling you as parents, if you have a kid that's having a hard time, don't push him to do it. Right? There's no need to make the person go through all these anxieties. I had two different kids that I felt would be too hard. My second kid, I felt it would be too hard for him to lane. So I just told the older brother, okay, you're laning for him. And he just did Av Torah. Then he decided, I want to do Musaf. So he also davened Musaf. And my third son also, we said, okay, you'll lean part of it. And we split up the rest. So he laned part of it. And then I laned some. Son laned some. My son-in-law laned some. He did another one, did Av Torah. We split the whole thing up. Okay. There's no obligation. Yeah. Oh, you guys split up also for obvious reasons, yes. Yeah. Now, next, marriage. Okay, the next life cycle event, marriage. In the time of Gemara, we already know this from the Gemaras that we've been learning, there was a different time period for Erusin than Nisuin. What was the usual? 12 months in between the two. You could stipulate otherwise, just if you didn't stipulate. So then that was the standard 12 months between what we call Erusin, halachic engagement, and Nisuin, chuppah. It's really not engagement. The marriage is really like marriage part one and marriage part two. Because as we know, the time of the Gemara, you're already married. If your fiance / wife cheated on you, it's adultery. So it's a real marriage. Today we do it all together. Ashkenazim have the minhag of having the Shabbos before the wedding, what's it called?
Shabbos Afrah.
Afrah. And the chassan gets an aliyah. Svardim have the minhag of having the Shabbos afterwards, called Shabbat Chatan. And then there's a party, and he gets the aliyah. Then, at the chuppah, all you need is a husband and wife and two edim and a ring, or anything worth a Shabbat Pruta. Okay? You don't need people. You don't need a Masadar Kedushin.
What?
You don't need any of that. We have a minhag of having all those things. But all you need is a boy over 13, a girl over 12. He owns something that's worth a Shabbat Pruta. And he says, be my wife. Our custom is Sarah Mekudesh Ali, Tabat Zok, that Moshe of Israel. And there's all sorts of insights in what that means in Tosfos, because that Moshe of Israel, you guys are also learned, very good. But if you just said also, marry me, right? That would be good. If we have a minion, so then we all say Sheva Brachos. Like, up until COVID, who didn't have a wedding with a minion? Everyone did. But during COVID, people got married without minyanim, right? Because you weren't allowed to have people in such close proximity. So, went back to like these original halachot of, there's no Sheva Brachos now, right? It's like we take it as a grant. Like, of course it's Sheva Brachos. It's not. You need a minion. If you have a minion, then you have Sheva Brachos. There's a minhag of breaking a glass at the chuppah. What's that for? Zechlum. Now, in the Gemara, it was because one rabbi saw everyone getting too crazy. Said, like, they were probably drinking, and they were getting so frivolous, so he smashed some glass, you know, so that people should, you know, sober up a little bit. But Tosa says, we do it, as you guys said, Zechel Chorban, which is why I have a little pet peeve. My pet peeve is, when do people break the glass? Right after the end of the last Sheva Brachos. Now, what does everyone yell? Mazel Tov. This is Zechel Chorban. It's so ridiculous. We're breaking the glass because the Chorban was destroyed, and people say, Mazel Tov. So I personally, the first time I was asked to be Sadr Kedusha, I started looking things up, and I saw we have a sefer across the hall called Hilchot Nisuin, like, you know, and it's a red book, I don't remember the whole title, something like that, Erusin V'Nisuin, and it says that there's different minhagim. You can do it after the Kedushin or after the Nisuin. So I do, any of the weddings that I do, I break the glass after the Kiddushin, after, you know, she gets the ring, and then I explain to everyone, we're now breaking the glass for Zechel HaKorban, how we're still missing Beis HaMikdash, explain to everyone what we're doing, and then just to make matters, just make sure that's not a Pavlovian, you know, response, while we're singing Meshkechech, I take the glass, I tell the Chassan in the middle, when they go, Im Lo Al, everyone's biggie singing, hitting the high notes, I tell them to break the glass, get out of the way. It's all over. No one saw the glass getting broken. No one screams Mazel Tov. I'm very happy. Everyone else is befuddled, and I don't care. And and then we continue. And at the end of the wedding, everyone's going, "Why am I breaking the glass? We did that already." Okay, so that's what I do. But I haven't seen that many other people do that. There's another misconception. What? In Israel, we do it. Yeah. In Israel, we do it. Israel, do it.
I went to two chuppahs in my life.
I also had a problem. I went back to do a wedding for a student of mine, and he had this like band, and I said, "All right, which Imeshkechech Yerushalayim do you know?" And they didn't know any. It was like this non-Jewish band, and they said, or they were not so Jewish, and they said, "We know, you know, Jerusalem of Gold." I said, "Yeah, that's not what I'm looking for." So I said, "Fine," and I said, "I just sang it."
Okay. Saying,
no, I sang a Meshkechech. I said, everyone join in. We sang it. I made him break the glass. But you know, they couldn't join in. They're playing the music because they just didn't know any of them.
I don't know if it was that there was a Sephardi wedding or just this person that they sang it and then the chassans like read the psukim afterwards.
Yes, I've seen that also. It's also nice. Okay, the only problem is that I'm worried about all the people screaming mouths stuff. But okay, yeah.
What's the whole thing with the two mother-in-laws breaking a damn plate?
Okay, not to say it like that.
That's an Israeli thing, I
think. It's not. I saw it running in the
chutzpah. Yeah.
It's
at Tanayim. Tanayim.
After running up the chutzpah.
Okay, so, yeah. There, probably Ashkenazi. Ashkenazim, I had this idea of having Tanayim. That you have an engagement party, and there they write like a contract saying, we're going to bring in this, you're going to bring in this. To the wedding, they like sign some kind of contract, what each party's going to bring in, and the mothers break a plate. Today, if people do it, they do it at the chassan's tish already at the wedding, and they break the plate at the chassan's tish. The tanayim today, in most non like Hasidic weddings, they just do the tanayim also at the chassan's tish. But Hasidim today still also have a tanayim, like an engagement party, and they'll do the tanayim then, they break the glass, the plate then. It's like a halachic engagement party. But it's a problem. So I don't know. It's sort of like a Zeichel HaKorban type of thing. Then, of course, people made it into schoolers. So all the single girls take a piece of the plate, and that means they'll get married. Okay, fine.
What about single guys?
Get in
go
there and see.
It.
Go for it.
Go cash out some cases.
We'll find someone.
Yeah, like I said, you write in the contract that I'm going to make sure to bring, I'm going to get them an apartment. I'm going to get them a car. I'm going to get them, what?
Shut the hell up, you idiot.
It's probably also like a Zeichel HaKorban type of thing. Okay, I don't recall. Okay, now, Kesef Shtar and Bia are the three ways. Three
Kesef
ways. Three ways. Okay, the three ways that we can get married. Okay, three ways that we can get married. Three. Now you're telling them to be quiet. Three ways that they can get married. Some people think that all three things happen at the wedding.
Uh-huh.
They think the ring is kesef, the ksuv is shtar, you go into the yichud, you room for bia. Okay? That's not true. Okay? You get married with the ring. That's it. You're married with the ring. The ksuba is an insurance policy. That's all it is, an insurance policy for the wife. It's not getting married through shtar. Okay. Last thing. Life events, death. Okay? When someone dies, so the first thing is you tear kriya. Okay? If you hear that one of your seven immediate relatives died, you tear kriya. Then you prepare,
Rabbi?
You could. Okay? You tear, then you have what?
The Roman says you do kriya for
a Roman. Yeah. You Rabbi Mufak, you tear kriya, yeah? And then you also, then you start preparing for a funeral. When you're preparing for the funeral, osik b'mitzvah patur min mitzvah. You're involved in all the preparations and you don't do any other mitzvot. At the funeral, you should have hespedim. What's a hesped?
Eulogy.
What's the purpose? To get people to cry. Okay? That's you shouldn't exaggerate, but you should let people realize what kind of loss. We're going to suffer this loss. Okay? Right now, this person was in the world. Now this person's not there. And obviously, there are some funerals you don't need anyone to say anything. It's such a tragic death. Just, you know, the mere sight of the person being brought there will bring people to tears. But, yeah.
In
Eretz Yisrael, there's no coffin. Yeah. Then after the funeral, you have the laws of Shiva. You sit on a low stool or on the floor. No Torah unless it's related to Avelis. When someone comes to pay a Shiva visit, do you know what you're supposed to talk about?
The person.
First of all, you don't talk unless the person wants to speak. Could be that they're exhausted. They've been speaking for the last 3 hours, telling stories. They're just too tired. So you don't force them. But you follow their lead. If they start talking, so then you ask them about the person you talk about. If you know stories about the person, you tell about the person. But it's not to get their mind off of things. Before Shiva, before even the funeral, what your status? Before Avelis.
Not Avelis.
You don't do
mitzvah. Onen, aside from having the regular Avelis halachot, also can't have meat or wine. Okay, sometimes people forget it. They're like flying from Chutzlar to Eretz Yisrael for the funeral, and they order the kosher meal, and it comes with meat. And they're not like thinking, right? At that time, you don't have meat, you don't have wine. So you have basically the steps are Onen, Shiva. After Shiva, you still have Shloshim. And if for a parent, you also have what?
11 months.
Another 11 months. Okay? You have a full year of Avelis for parents. You only say Kaddish for 11 months with a full year of Avelis for a parent. But for other siblings, it's only 30 days. Okay? If someone else, a spouse, passed away, 30 days. Someone told me the reason why for a spouse you only have 30 days because you don't need a whole year. Of course, they're never going to forget the person. Of course, they're going to always, you know, Gemara says when a spouse dies, that person dies for the spouse. It's the biggest loss for the spouse. So, but I know you have to leave, so we'll finish it up. That kibud av ha'eim, the halacha of 12 months is the din kibud av ha'eim. And therefore, if the parents are mochel on something, they can be mochel. I already told my family that when I pass away, I don't want them to miss out on family smachot during the 11 months. That 11 months is for my honor. So if someone has a wedding, they're obviously allowed to go because it's their kid, even if they're in the year of Avelis. But I'd want their uncles and, you know, and aunts to be able to go to these smachot. So I told them, this didn't keep it out of aim. I ran it by Rav Nevin Sol. He said, absolutely, I can make that call. And I told my family that's how I would like them to. Ordinarily, who can go to a wedding during their year of Avelis? Only, let's say, the father and the mother. So let's say the father and the mother, one of them sitting Shiva, not sitting Shiva, one of them's in Avelis, they still marry after their kid. Okay? But it'll be more difficult to get a heter for the uncles and the aunts to come. Okay? Or let's say not just a wedding, a bar mitzvah. I want my family to be able to go to all these life cycle events, a bris, a bar mitzvah, a bat mitzvah, a wedding.
Did you put that in writing?
I told it to them. They were all there, and I made it clear. All right, we'll stop over here.